Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Social Services Committee. I welcome representatives from Newfoundland and Labrador Housing Corporation this evening to our committee. I understand that Mr. Osborne is substituting for Ms. Dempster, and Jerry is here for herself. Yes. Welcome, everybody. Minister, I'm going to have the committee introduce themselves first, and then I'm going to ask you to introduce your staff, and we'll get started. Tom, if you want to start.
Sure. Tom Osborne, MHA, St. John South.
Dana English, researcher with the opposition.
Stillman Flynn, MHA for Humber East.
And Jerry Rogers, and I work for the good people of St. John's Center. And
Tony Corp.
Oh, sorry, Susan Williams, a researcher. She just had to quickly step out.
Now we're back on the air. Tony Cornick from the beautiful Cultural District of Port au Prince.
Glenn Little, MHA of Bonavista South.
Kevin Pollard, MHA Baybridge Springdale District.
And I'm Glenn Littlejohn, MHA for Port au Grave. Minister, if you want to introduce your staff and or have them introduce themselves, and we'll start with you, sir.
Clyde Jackman, Minister responsible for Newfoundland Labrador Housing, and I'll let my staff introduce themselves as the red light comes on.
Tom Lawrence, interim CEO, Housing Corporation.
Dennis Kendall, Executive Director of Regional Operations.
And Dave Aker, interim CFO.
And just a reminder to the gentlemen that before you go to speak, make sure your little red light is on, and as for the committee members as well, so we get it all recorded downstairs. And Minister, you have 15 minutes for opening remarks, and we'll start from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't take 15 minutes, but I do want to make some brief commentary. This is my first stint with working with people from Newfoundland and Labrador Housing. And I've said on several occasions, I don't think there's a more recognized group across the province, rural and maybe within the city, than Newfoundland and Labrador Housing. And the many programs, the suite of programs that they have, I think people are more than familiar with them. Also, I know, you know, having been in this portfolio for just a number of months, the cases that come forward are often very complex and have their challenges. But I've got to say, while we as MHA sometimes inquire on behalf of our constituents, we may not always get the result that we want. What I have found with the staff that are down there, they're more than committed to the cause that they're carrying out on behalf of the people of the province, and will find and try and find every way possible to accommodate clients. So I want to thank them for that. Of course, a few of the programs that we have in place, we were pleased to announce the $68 million affordable housing unit this year. And over the past 10 years, we've had approximately 1,117 of these new affordable units across the province. And the latest agreement will see $27 million invested in that over the next 4 years. This is 1 year out now, and another 4 years. The remaining $41 million will go into the Provincial Home Repair Program. So, you know, the continued support for that as well. Again, we are supporting the Residential Energy Efficiency Program for $3 million. And, you know, it's a staggering number when you look at it. There's $10.1 million in rent supplement programs, and this year it'll go to assist some 1,882 households. There's a new project that I've asked for. The rent supplement program, there's $10.1 million going into that this year. There's an increase, too, of another, there's an additional 150 this year, so the total rent supplements for the province this year is 1,882. Also, I know that Jerry, you'll be interested in this one. We're going to run a pilot for the portable rent supplement, and I believe at this particular point we have 22 or 24 that we've put in place, and that allows, you know, someone. My thought on it is we may have someone who wants to live in a particular neighborhood because of family support or something of that nature. So what we can do now is we can support them in that subsidy, and there are rules and guidelines and stipulations and codes that they would still be expected to meet under Newfoundland, Labrador, and housing standards. But hopefully we can work more towards this, and this pilot will set us in a specific direction. Supportive living, again, there's another $5.3 million going into that. $2 million investment in the home modification program. And so, you know, the work that Newfoundland Labrador Housing is doing in the province is commendable. And I make no bones about it. The investment that we've put into it over the years has seen major improvements in wait lists. As a matter of fact, these folks will tell me that anybody who applies this year for the Provincial Home Repair Program will be served within the year. So when you can speak to that, that's a positive piece of news. So we'll open the floor for your piece of work, Mr. Chair, and we'll take her from there.
Thank you, Mr. Tom, you have 15 minutes on the clock, and you have opening remarks, and I'll ask the clerk to call the first subhead, please.
Subhead 1.1.01.
The clerk has called 1.1.01. Tom.
Thank you. I guess considering there's only one appropriation, yeah. I guess you're open to questions, general questions. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be very short.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I expected there to be questions around programming, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Minister.
The
budget this year is almost $8 million shy of what it was last year.
Yeah.
During the lockup, it was explained to us that it was... there was a piece of land in Southlands that they were hoping to make up that amount from. Can you elaborate on that a little more?
There's two pieces of property. There's four pieces of property out in Southlands, and they can speak to it more. And what we've decided on doing is selling two of it, and then that's basically it. The premise of that is to sell four pieces. You probably overlooked the market or whatnot. So this is the two pieces that we've decided on, and I think the value of the other two piece of property is around $8 million.
Yes. Yeah. So you're selling two this year with the hopes of collecting about $8 million and making
$7.7 million.
Yeah. All right. Just a general question on land. I know years ago, in addition to Elizabeth Towers and Churchill Square, I mean, those were revenue generators for Newfoundland and Labrador Housing and helped to subsidize the low income housing. In addition, Newfoundland and Labrador Housing generated a great deal of revenue from land sales and land development and have kind of moved away from that. Is there any expectation that Newfoundland and Labrador Housing will get back into land sales, land development in order to generate some of the revenue needed to maintain the properties that you have and potentially build additional properties?
You want to speak to that?
Tom?
Yeah.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, there we go. Yes, thank you. That's a good question. Back in the 90s, we were directed by government to divest of all of our interest in all the land that we owned. And even prior to that, we were directed to divest ourselves of all of our market rental housing, like Elizabeth Towers, Churchill Square, Pine Bud. We had units in Marystown, Stephenville, Goose Bay. So, yes, we were directed to get out of land development. But we developed all of Mount Pearl, we developed all of Cowan Heights, and, they were profitable. But anyway, it was the wisdom of the day by the government to get out of that business. So over the years, we've been selling off these blocks of land. We don't develop them. They're sold, but the infrastructure is in place. But they're raw land in the sense that the developer, whoever buys it, has got to put in the roads to serve the local servicing and that kind of thing. So we've been selling those pieces of land now since the 90s. The only, like the minister said, we have four pieces left out in Southlands. We sold the last one in 2011 and 12, And it was a bigger piece, and I think it was like $13 million we got for that. So this piece now, we're putting up two more blocks, 7A and 6, that's what we call Phase 7A and 6, and we expect to get around $7 million for that. And we have two more to go probably in a couple of years' time, because you don't want to flood the market all at one time, right? But, yeah, no, we were directed, and we have no direction to get back into that business.
Okay. So I guess that question is probably more appropriate to the minister. I mean, is there any intention on government providing direction? You know, I know that Southlands or a Powers Pond, and I think even part of Southlands, Cowan Heights, I mean, those were planned developments. Contractors made money. Housing made money. Mm. It subsidized the operations of housing.
I can tell you that at this particular point, there's not.
Okay. Are you able to provide any sort of breakdown on the one line item that's there, the $34.5 million, and give some indication as to where that's appropriated?
All the breakdown on the dollars?
Yeah.
Yep. We're one line in the estimates, but our budget is actually $118 million because the grant is 34.5, but we get $50, $60 million from CMHC every year, annually. We have rental income of around $20 million. And then the rest, we have some interest income and land sales, of course, including the Southlands this year.
I could probably even provide you with that list if you wanted it.
Okay.
Yes.
That would probably save time if we could get it.
That would save time. And there's no reason. Yeah.
Oh, obviously, sorry, Minister, if we're providing to one party, can we provide it to both? So that way.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Are you able to provide a list with that of the third-party agencies that have been provided grant monies through Newfoundland and Labrador Housing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
How many employees are currently directly employed through Newfoundland and Labrador Housing?
I'm going to take a stab now. It's around 420?
Yeah.
400.
Okay.
Missed it. 400.
Are they 400 full-time, or is that full and part?
Tom?
They're full-time employees.
Okay. Are there any part-time employees as well? Or?
We just have a couple.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Seasonal.
We have a couple of seasonal, but the vast majority are full-time. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any direction given to housing to eliminate any of those positions through attrition?
Yes, there is.
Minister, can you repeat that, please, for Mike?
Oh, yes, yes, yep, yep. We're looking at 6 positions per year for 5 years, total 30.
Are you able at this point to give an indication as to what those positions are?
I can't really at this particular point, but we have a number of people that are up for retirement. And then we will be taking a look at that in consultations with CEO and staff, and then we'll make determinations on that.
Okay.
Yep.
Are those positions included in the numbers that were provided in the budget, or are they over and above?
Tom?
Yeah, no, they're included in the budget, yeah. It's around $650,000 this year for those 6 positions.
No, I mean the positions that were identified as being eliminated through attrition in the budget speech by Minister Wiseman?
Not that I can remember.
Okay, so
they would have been included in the overall numbers that he was talking about, the 1,400. They would have been included in that.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, going through the budget exercise, we offered up to find a number of positions. Once this determination was made, they will be within that 30.
Besides the attrition positions, are there any other positions that will be affected through Newfoundland and Labrador Housing? Any other layoffs or?
Tom?
Nothing, no. We're not anticipating any other layoffs other than that now.
I will point out that one of the things that I think these people have been very good in is that, you know, if there are ways to find efficiencies or if there's a position that they feel doesn't need to be refilled, they've taken initiatives on their own previous to this.
So the positions directed by government, the six positions per year, are there plans for other positions besides what you've been directed by government to reduce the size of housing threat?
I think that within these numbers, that will be our expectation. I don't think we'd expect them to go beyond that.
Okay. How many offices does housing currently have throughout the province now?
Tom?
We have seven. Avalon Region, Marystown, Gander, Grand Falls, Stephenville, Cornerbrook, Goose Bay, and a sub-office in Lab City.
Okay. So, are there any plans to reduce the number of offices or consolidate offices?
Tom?
Not at this time, no.
Are you able to provide a wait list by region for Newfoundland and Labrador housing?
Numbers, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You want us to tell you now or provide them to you?
You can provide them. That's fine, unless you have them.
They're very, very detailed.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
That's it. The teacher is there now. We got to say our name.
Am I supposed to say my name?
Yes, you got to.
You are. We're okay. They understand down below. We're okay. Good. We are good.
He's been naming you every time, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah. Yes, I have the list here, but I can certainly provide it to you.
Okay, I think it would be best thing.
If you could provide
it's very detailed
that.
By region.
Yeah.
And it breaks it out well.
Tom, you're on.
And then it breaks it up also by the criteria in the wait list.
Okay. So when can we expect a copy of that, Minister?
We'll get Tom and them on it. We'll get Tom and them on it as soon as we leave here this evening, and I'll see if I can have it to you within the next. Say we'll have it to you before the next week is out.
Okay.
If there's a problem with that, I'm sure they'll let me know afterwards if that's not enough time. But we'll get it to you as soon as we can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are the income cutoffs still 32,500?
Yes, it is.
And that's island-wide. They're different in Labrador, I think.
Yes, it is.
What is the amount in Labrador? 65.
You go ahead. 65, yep. Yeah.
Do they apply now to all housing programs, PHRP and REAP and so on?
Are we what?
Those income thresholds, are they consistent through all housing programs?
Tom?
Yes, they are, yeah. Except the HMP, I think it's 45,000 because that's for disabled people.
Yeah.
And, you know, they need a little bit more leeway there, right?
Okay, what would that be in Labrador?
50,000, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's 50,000 in Labrador. But I certainly check to make sure.
Okay. There's $8.8 million for the Provincial Home Repair Program. Can you tell me the average grant amount? It used to be $5,000. Is it still at $5,000?
It's around $3,900 now.
$3,900.
So to drop it down a little slightly. The maximum is $5,000, but the average is around $3,900.
Okay. How many grants were distributed under this program throughout over the past budget year?
1,400.
And you know what the wait list is for that program right now?
Actually, a number of years ago, it was almost 4,700. But over the past 6 years, the province has injected an extra $4 million a year. So that's $24 million extra funding we had for PHRP. So currently now, we are serving the current year wait list. So if you apply this year, you'll get a grant this year.
Perfect. We can't complain about everything the government does.
Okay, you can.
But I'll come back with some tomorrow.
I figured you would.
Promise.
Okay, the budget also mentions $250,000 for the program in Labrador. Why is the Labrador and Island amount separated?
Tom?
That's for PHRP?
Yep.
Yeah, well, in Labrador, that's all the take-up that we can get down there.
Okay.
It's not a very popular program in Labrador, and we've done everything to try and increase its popularity, but nothing seems to take effect on it.
The partnership with the Nanatsiavut government, $700,000 to assist low-income homeowners in Inuit communities. That was in 2014. Is there a similar program this year?
No, that was just a one-time program. And we cost-shared that with the Nanatsiavut government, $350,000 each. And it was a special one-time program to help them with some terrible houses they had, I think mostly in Nain.
I'm going to hold you there, Thomas, and I'll come back to you.
I still got 11 seconds.
That's okay.
I got one more question.
Okay, one more. Go on.
Go for it.
Does the Housing Corporation, are you subject to the Landlord-Tenant Relations Act?
Tom?
Yes, we are, yeah. We follow that act, yes.
Jerry?
Thank you. Can I just ask, are you, you follow it, are you bound by it, though?
Tom?
Yes, we are.
Okay. There's a mythology out there that you're not.
Oh, yeah, no, we are. It's just yeah. Like any other landlord.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that that mythology is out there. Hey? Yeah. I want to thank you very much for coming this evening. I know everybody's so busy. I just came back from a Corner Brook and was part of the All-Party Committee on Mental Health. Mm-hmm. And we met with managers in the Regional Health Authority. We met with service providers. We met with social workers, with psychiatrists. We met with community groups providing services for people with mental health and addictions. We met with people living with mental illness. We met with their families. Without exception, everybody talked about the housing crisis. And they talked about the need for affordable housing, plus then also the need for supportive housing. But the desperation, particularly for people with complex needs, is astounding. And they talked about the same that we hear in all of our districts, well, in terms of some of the larger areas, people living in horrible, horrible boarding house situations, people coming out of it, if they've been incarcerated, then being released, or people who have mental health issues, people who are on income support, particularly single people whose income support is so minimal. So housing is such an important foundational piece as to whether someone, you all know that, I don't mean to be preachy,
no.
But whether someone can get well, whether someone can stay well, whether a senior can avoid going into a personal care home or a long-term care home, if they have enough supports to live in their homes. I oftentimes think that when I'm standing in the house, perhaps I'm exaggerating. But then when you go out on the streets and in the community centers and church halls and hear people's stories or our phone calls, you know that it's not an exaggeration. I don't believe that the situation is getting better. I do believe it's more challenged. And I know that your staff deal with a lot of this issue, and you have such wonderful, dedicated staff. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask you a few questions. One of the questions I'm going to ask you, why are you selling the last four pieces of land? Because we know if any kind, we know that what's happening across the country, across the continent, almost globally, in that dealing with helping people with complex needs, helping people with addictions, with mental health issues, that, or homelessness, that the approach is housing first. Dr. Latta, psychiatrist, our senior psychiatrist in the province, the chief forensic psychiatrist, said his people, the people that he sees, cannot get well if they do not have a place to live, a safe, decent place to live. So why sell this land now when we know that no one's making land anymore and we don't know what the future is going to hold in terms of that whole issue of housing first?
Minister.
One point is that we're not selling all the land. The second point is that, the number of units, you can speak to the number of units that we would have. Plus, if we can get into a deportable, more into the portable subsidies that we are talking about, hopefully we'd have enough houses to meet the needs of those that are seeking them. We have adopted the org code report, and yes, one of the things that I will agree with you, it just seemed to make common sense. I don't know why we didn't get there. Before, you had to work your way to earn to a place.
And you couldn't.
And this report says that the very first thing you need is you need safety and security and a place to lay your head each night. Now let's start to put the supports around you to work out the issues that you have. But first and foremost is finding, accommodations. And I don't know, this is a policy piece, and I don't think we should put it up on Newfoundland Labrador housing officials to answer on policy. But from our perspective, we'll continue to work through the org code. I asked the committee to have the report done back to me before the end of April, and they did submit it last week. Now I'm going to take a look down through it and then see where we move with it. But it's not something I want to sit on for a number of months.
Okay. So my question is, in the sale of this land, are there any conditions? But the other thing is we know that no one's really building rental units aside from...
Building what?
Rental units. Aside from the groups, organizations who are availing of the housing initiative, where they're building supportive units.
So your question?
My question is, nobody is building new rental units, really. We haven't seen an increase, really, in the stock of rental units in the province. So Newfoundland and Labrador Housing is one of the main landlords. And then we have seen some additional units that come through the housing initiative where groups and organizations are building. Some of them are supportive housing units. Some are straight but affordable units. It's a drop in the bucket. It's very important, and the work is great. So to talk about the rent subs, which is, I think, really important, but do you foresee, when we look at our aging population, that the rental stock that's going to be necessary is out there, going to be out there?
Well, I think with the affordable housing initiatives that we are making, like I said, there's some 1,700, and we're continuing to build those from a senior's perspective. I think that's there. I think one of the things that we've got to take a look at is the difference between what we're seeing in the urban parts of, especially the urban part here in St. John's and Labrador, as two unique areas that require special consideration, and what the demand is in other parts of rural Newfoundland. I know that, there's a demand all across the province, but the demand in these two areas that I mentioned are much higher than they are anywhere else in the province. So I guess what we've got to do is we've got to work with Newfoundland and Labrador Housing to see how we can, continue to find units that are suitable for through Newfoundland and Labrador Housing and meet the clientele that you're talking about.
So, it's the same in Clarenville, it's the same in Cornerbrook.
Yep.
Areas. So in the sale of the land, are there any conditions on what would be built on that land? Whether or not is there going to be housing developments? Will there be any affordable units? Are there any conditions at all on the sale of the land?
Yes, actually, the last time we sold a block in 2011 and 12, the part of the condition of the sale, the developer had to keep 100 of the lots for we'll call it modest housing, right? 800-900 square feet. And so, I mean, we're looking at doing the same thing again, you know, probably this time as well, right? You know, so that, you know, you, and these would be intertwined and blended in with all the rest of the units, all the rest of the houses, I mean.
So there's, you're not looking at housing density, whether to the, a requirement for any kind of housing density or?
No.
Okay. Thank you. So we have the total budget of the corporation for 2015. Why was the provincial revenue greater than the $770,000 that was budgeted for 2014? Did you see a greater revenue than what you had estimated for 2014?
Tom?
Is that in rental revenue?
Yeah, was that rental revenue?
Where are you, Jerry? Or what are you referencing?
Grants and subsidies.
So what? Yeah. Why was right there? Yeah, in the grants and subsidies, the provincial grant.
Grants and subsidies.
So the budget on the line item number 10, grants and subsidies, the budget was
$41,494.
$41 million, sorry, yes. And then it was revised to $42.26 million.
Yes. Okay, now.
Okay. Tom?
Sorry, Tom. That was to cover off a general salary increase that the employees had received for last year. So they put that into our budget for this current year, 14-15.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah. So aside from the properties that we just spoke about, were there any properties sold in 2014-15, land or properties?
Minister?
No.
Yeah, no.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Between the two of us, we got no out.
Okay, yeah. What vacant properties are left? Are there properties that have been sort of decommissioned that are on the chopping block?
Dennis, get that?
Yeah. Dennis?
This number changes, you know, almost daily. But at the moment, we have about 128 vacant properties across the province. 26 are in rural areas where there's no demand. 10 are being prepared for tender as we speak.
What does that mean, Dennis, for tender? Like for
the,
repair?
The tender documents for to get the work done is being
get
prepared
the work done.
By our engineering division.
Yeah.
We have another 12 that's already been work in progress type of thing. And we have 50, but with some major repairs and structural mold issues, these sorts of things. But 28 of them are in an area of Marystown where there's absolutely no demand on our wait list.
Okay.
We have another 27 in addition to that where the work is ongoing as well. And we have a total of three that's waiting for inspection to get the work done.
Okay,
Jerry, can I hold you there?
Can I ask one quick question to wrap this one up? Are there any properties that you're thinking, okay, we're going to sell them, we're going to move them on?
Other than...
Minister?
Not other than the two that we've...
But the two pieces of land. Yeah. But, I mean, any other buildings, units?
Dennis?
You know, we haven't decided at this point, but we do have some areas of the province where there's no demand. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we continue to try to keep them from falling down and spending money on them when we have no demand? And so I guess that's the decision.
And what areas would they be?
We have just as an example, which is down in my area, I've had a discussion with them that they have some between 30, I believe, and 28 pieces of property in Marystown right now. There's not need for the uptake, so the decision is going to be, you know, are we going to keep them or not? And in all likelihood, we won't.
Okay. I'm going to hold your ear, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, still on that theme, I know housing have some buildings in Pleasantville that are not considered low-income but fixed income rentals. What are your plans for those buildings?
Well, the we've been having some discussions about that one. We haven't finally decided on it one way or the other, but I know that one of the things that's been raised is that you've got some people that are living in those that would be above thresholds of what we'd have for Newfoundland Labrador housing. So we're taking a look at it.
Any plans to sell those units?
Or? Well, we not at this particular moment. We're just having discussions around it.
Okay. Any indication as to what the discussions are? What way you're, you know, what your focus is?
No, it's just, you know, that it is, has been brought to our attention that this is Newfoundland Labrador housing property, and, you know, there are people there that, well, I guess our question is, can they afford to pay more? Do we want to do something different? So it's a broad discussion at this point.
Okay. Under the rent supplement program, what is the budget this year for the rent supplement program? Is that an increase or remains the same or a decrease over last year?
Tom?
Yeah, no, it's the same as last year. It's around $10 million.
Okay. How many rent supplements does that $10 million?
1,882.
Yeah. Can you be exact?
Yeah, 1,882.
Well,
150 this year.
Okay. What's the average rent supplement, and what would you call the maximum rent supplement?
Maximum.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, Minister?
No, you go ahead, Tom.
I'm sorry.
No, Tom, go ahead.
The maximum rent that the maximum rent that a landlord could charge is $800. So the way it works is the client will pay 25% of their income, net income, and we pay the difference between whatever that is and the 800 maximum. Okay. So it's around the same as our own units. Around $350 a month is the average income, $323.
Okay.
It's the average rent for the client, sorry.
What is the amount in Labrador? Last year was 104,000. Is that the same?
For what?
In Labrador.
Okay.
Tom?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, that's the same, yeah.
And the cutoff in Labrador would be the same as for Newfoundland and Labrador housing?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
The city have taken a direction, the city of St. John's. For example, there's a development proceeding in Shea Heights that they've put out the tender. It was a purpose tender where the builder had to ensure that the properties were affordable for home purchase. To ensure that they're below market average for purchase price. Does Newfoundland and Labrador Housing have any hopes of taking on that direction so that you're not only a rental agency, but you're looking at, perhaps with some of the land that remains, some of the land bank you have remaining, that you will look at a purpose-driven so that homeowners make it affordable for homeowners to get in below the market average?
We haven't up to this point, but I mean, I guess anything is an option to look at, you know. But for that, there's another program, the homeowner, the down payment assistance program, which is designed to specifically help those class of people. Making between $40,000 and $65,000.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question on that as well, actually. But I mean, what the city are doing, and it's great in the city. I mean, Newfoundland and Labrador Housing operate throughout the province. I mean, it's one thing to have your down payment, but if you can't afford the mortgage, it's another thing. With what the city are doing is ensuring that these units are below market average, which makes it affordable for people to get in. Now, you know, they're also looking at that development, some assistance through the developer on down payments as well. But, you know, just a suggestion, I guess, to government and or housing that, you know, I mean, there's two types of housing demand. One is low-income rentals. I mean, the other would be, you know, low-income ownership.
Mm. Okay, we'll take that under consideration. We'll take the point under consideration. Have a chat on.
Okay, with the down payment assistance program, can you tell us some more about the rollout of this program, some of the details?
Yeah, I can. I'll speak to some of it. Well, we're hoping that it won't be too long before we'll roll it out. What we've done is we've set a threshold, like for housing costs, for example. In St. John's, we know that you know you're going to pay more to get a modest house than you would be if you're in, I don't know, I won't say Rocky Harbor, but somewhere on the Northern Peninsula. So we've set out a maximum threshold for the price of a house. Now, I wonder, should I give you details, or will we do it in our news release, in our announcement? You should come to our announcement.
I won't announce it on you.
You come to our announcement. We'll give you all the details then. But all I'll say to you now is that we're going to be rolling it out very shortly.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good one. You know, like when I sit and I look at somebody, I'll use the example. I'll use two examples. That two individuals who might be working at a department store, combined salaries and paying a rent, this program could help them purchase a home, and it would be theirs. And somebody used an example today, a young professional who had finished making $42,000 a year, just coming out, couldn't you know get a loan through the bank. Therefore, this would allow somebody who's coming out of school or something to avail of it. The term that we like to use, it's a hand up, not a handout. And that's one you're going to be hearing me say a fair bit about. It's a hand up, not a handout.
Okay. So when you say a hand up, not a handout, are people expected to repay their down payment?
There's going to be terms around it, but I think people will be more than pleased with what we're looking at. Okay. Yeah.
We talked a little bit earlier about the home modification program. Can you tell me what the budget is for that this year?
The home modification program, it's $2
million. Can you tell me how many grants will be provided under that?
Do you know how many? Yep. Tom?
Approximately 300.
83% of those are seniors.
Okay.
That impressed me.
What was that percentage again?
83. I kind of wish this place was this quiet all the time.
Yeah. Usually when I speak it is.
Yeah, right.
What percentage of people really want to hear what I have to say? What percentage of housing's current stock is now considered to be fully accessible?
Tom.
Just got to look up the number there now. So currently, out of our housing stock, we have about, I think it's 83 that are fully accessible. We realize it's not a lot, but these units are old and they're very difficult to make accessible without basically tearing them down and rebuilding them. But we do have another 551 that we call visitable. So that means that somebody can, you have zero step entry,
accessible bathrooms.
Accessible bathrooms, doors are wider so that somebody can, who's disabled, for example, in a wheelchair, could visit your home. So we have 551 of those. Okay. And in the affordable housing program, there's another 223. Now, we don't directly own those, but they're still available through the affordable housing program, 223.
And that's a condition.
Minister.
That's a condition of constructing those, that yes. There's a number that have to be accessible. If you get 10, There's a number that's going to be accessible.
That's the program where the housing partners with contractors to provide affordable housing.
Yeah.
Do you know what the wait time is? Not counting the fact that your application expires after 1 year, so there's only ever less than a 1 year wait. You know, what's the true wait time now for somebody who's applying for housing? And
I think
piggybacked on that, what is the wait time for accessible housing?
Dennis?
I'd like to
Dennis speak. Minister.
Because we had this discussion just a couple of days ago. And
Dennis?
We made some changes to the. First of all, I want to make a point. We made some changes recently with regards to the applications that would expire after 12 months. We don't allow people with complex needs, people with disabilities, and there's another group I'm losing here. Victims of family violence. We don't allow these to expire anymore. We felt that that was important, that we wouldn't ask them to reapply. With regards to the wait list, it's next to impossible. We do our wait. People will qualify for a home based upon the need, not necessarily first come, first serve. And having said that, if someone is a victim of family violence, they would get a house faster than someone, for example, who don't have any medical issues or any other problems or living in, you know, in. So we have a criteria that's we do it by based upon need, and I guess it's. But we do know that we placed about 880 people last year, and our wait list is less than that. So technically, they could all receive a home within, you know, the 12 months, depending upon their need, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Okay, Tom, I'm going to hold you there, so save your thought. Jerry, do you want to pick it up from there?
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm very interested in the wait list as well in terms of the categories, seniors, people who are wanting a one-bedroom unit or more than that. And it is. It's always been hard. So to get a true picture, because people drop off the list, so often they don't realize they've dropped off the list. At least those are the kinds of calls that we get. So the expiry is 12 months from your application, from your applying, not the calendar year or the fiscal year. It's okay. Right. So I guess it's a little bit hard then to get that true picture of, I mean, if it was within the calendar year, then it would be easier. So, but as much information as we could get in terms of the types of units people are looking for, the size, the region, the age, or the different categories,
that would
be great to have. So do you keep stats on how many people dropped off, expired, and then reapplied? Is that a stat that you have?
Dennis?
We do keep all the stats. I don't have them in front of me. There's a number of things that happens with a wait list. In 2014, we had 241 people who refused the unit that they were offered. Even though we say to them up front that you choose the part of the city where you want to live, when we do offer the home to them, 241 have turned it down, which is quite a substantial number. Our wait list at the moment is 830 people. We placed 531 in our own units last year and 354 in rent subs, because there's a natural turnover in both the rent sub program. People do move from that program as well, mm-hmm. and they also move from our own houses. So we placed 531 and 354. So that's what we placed last year, and we have a wait list of 830. But again, like I said earlier, it's very difficult to give a timeline on how long someone will be on the list, depending upon what their needs are.
And there was some talk of trying to streamline because some people are on the wait list for St. John's housing, some are on the wait list for Newfoundland Labrador housing. Has anything been done about that?
We don't share our wait list. There's a privacy issue. We don't say to them that you can't be on one or the other.
Yeah, no. I wouldn't
and
think
it's,
you would want
you know,
to do
they
that.
May be on both. That's true. They may be on both. And we know that a lot of them are.
Okay.
But again, the most important change that we've made in regards to the expiring of the people that drop off is that we don't, you know, the complex needs, the homeless, and the disabled groups, they don't expire anymore.
Right. And I imagine for many of those, they're looking for one-bedroom units, possibly two-bedroom units, and those are the fewest number of units that you have. Yes?
Yeah, we have a policy also that says that if someone is a one-bedroom requirement, say it's a single individual,
yeah,
we will allow them to move into a two-bedroom, but we won't allow them to move into a four-bedroom or a three-bedroom.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for that, by the way, social reasons and so
yeah.
on. But having said that, you know, we do our best to, you know, to move them up at least one bedroom if we don't have. Because our stock, you see, was built in the 1950s for the most part, 50s
Big
and 60s
families.
And 70s, when families were a lot bigger than what they are today. So we do have a demographic problem with, you know, in regards to our units.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Is there any plan to build any new social housing units this year?
Minister?
No.
Okay. I think we've asked this. For the budget, for the 2015 budget breakdown, can we have a breakdown of the different programs as well, like the public rental housing,
yes.
maintenance, modernization? Great. Thank you very much. And so are you in the process of renovating units to make them smaller?
Dennis?
We were given $1 million a few years ago. Government gave us some money to look into the cost of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We did a project in Corner Brook where we took two homes that were side by side and we changed into a disabled on the bottom, fully disabled unit on the bottom, and two single units on the top. We did a similar situation over on
Campbell Avenue, too, didn't you?
Monday Pond Road, that
yeah.
area, yeah, where we had a duplex with two three-bedroom units, and we now have four. Two up on top, two on the bottom now.
Yeah.
I will say that that's extremely costly, and it ran us somewhere in the area of $350,000, something like that. Which is quite expensive, but it is an option. But like I say, it would take a considerable amount of money to do so.
Okay. Yes. I guess sometimes it's easier to build new. Do you have a list of how many people were granted a rent sup but were refused by the landlord?
We may be able to get the numbers for you.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is the landlord, when we sign an agreement with a landlord, the landlord has the right to refuse, I think it's two, and then they have to take the third one.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and if the landlord continues to refuse, we can drop that agreement with that landlord. You know, that's, but we do have quite a, you know, we do have some that are refused by the landlord.
Yeah, I'd love to know how many.
I can see if we can get the number. You know,
okay, that would be great. Thanks. So the maximum rent then for any unit that is with a rent supplement is 800, is it?
Yes.
Minister?
Yes, it is, Jim.
Okay. But how do you handle rent increases? At what point can landlords say, okay, I want to raise the rent?
Yeah.
Dennis?
The landlord, you know, has a right to raise the rent, but I think it's only just once a year underneath the residential
yeah.
tenancies division. and that's how it's regulated. You know, we, the cap is $800. If they go above, the problem with that is if they do go to 825 or 850, then of course the client has to pick up the $50. That's over and above the 800. And so that do create a little bit of a problem, but we find that the market right now is beginning to correct itself, and that happens, of course. There's a lot of more units that are vacant in the city now. Vacancy rate in the city now is a lot higher than what it was a couple of years ago. So it may look after itself anyway.
Okay.
But we watch it very, very closely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Minister.
And just personally, too, I mean, that's a concern of mine, you know, that here we were a couple of years ago, everything was just up here. So, you know, where were we going to have to take a look at raising that level? But I think, like Dennis has said, right now we've seen the softening in that. So if it gets to that point again, we may have to reconsider it.
Okay. So the pilot project, portable, mm-hmm. How will that work?
Who wants to speak to it?
Dennis?
What we're doing is we've looked through our wait list and we've asked, you know, we've gone down through our wait list of people that are waiting for what we call in situ. They're already living in a place where they want to stay to live.
Yeah.
But, you know, we found very quickly, and this is why you run these pilots, you want to find out how it would work. We find very quickly that a lot of the people don't want to stay where they are. They want us to find a place for them and a better place for them in a lot of cases. But we did find 23, I think it is at this point in time, who we did subsidize exactly where they were in the home that they were. And we did the inspection on the property to make sure that it met the fire codes and you know, the life safety items. And once that was good to go, then we signed the agreement with the landlord.
Okay. So it's particularly in situations where a spouse has passed away.
And
Yeah,
so it, you know, it can work that way. But we did, in order to get to 23, we did go through a considerable number more than that.
Yes.
Something like 75 in order to get 23. Okay. That didn't want to stay where they were. They wanted to move somewhere else.
Okay.
I'm going to hold you to that one, Jerry, and I'm going to go back to Tom.
How many applications were approved last year?
For
housing. Applications received and then approved.
For rent supplements?
No, for Newfoundland and Labrador housing.
Okay.
It's Tom.
Tom.
Around 800. Around 800. It runs between 719 and 820, we'll say, on an average. That's the tenants we place in a run of a year.
No, not place. Applications that you've received. You've reviewed the application and said, yes, we're going to put you on the wait list.
We do have that number, but... Well, we can certainly get the number. I can't remember now. We can't remember exactly what it is.
So you're looking for the number...
Minister.
Sorry. You're looking for the number of applicants.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll get staff to get it for you.
Okay. How many are on file right now on the wait list at the moment?
Tom?
830.
Okay. Can you tell me what the budgeted amount is for the REAP program this year?
REAP is
$3 million.
$3 million.
Just going back to the applications that expire and people are dropped off, I know that's a cause of frustration for applicants. It's a cause of frustration for MHAs. A lot of times applicants fall off the list and are not even aware they fall off the list. And just to give an example, I placed a call 2 weeks ago to find out where somebody was on the list. They said still nothing. Didn't inform me that their application was going to expire on May the 7th. You know, we put a call in again today because their circumstances changed, and were advised that their application expired on May the 7th. Now, I mean, if housing had informed me, I've got authorization to make a call on their behalf, that their application was about to expire, I could have had that ball rolling. But to find out that we called literally a couple of days before it expired, we weren't informed, and then a couple of weeks later find out that the application expired 2 weeks ago, then I've got to go back and explain, well, they didn't tell me. You know, I'm sorry, they just didn't tell me, to a frustrated applicant. Is there any way that if an MHA is authorized on the file that we can be automatically informed? You know, you must be computerized and automated enough that, you know, that the person who's authorized to inquire on behalf of those individuals can be given, you know, even a month's notice that those individuals are going to have to reapply again.
Minister.
Yeah, I'll take that under advisement, and I'll speak to staff to see that, because, you know, I imagine with clients, just likewise, vice versa, we may have people who are applying to Newfoundland Labrador Housing who may find something and would not notify these people. So, you know, there's complications on both ends, but yeah, we'll have a discussion.
Absolutely, but I mean, you know, when we place a call and 3 days later, the application expires, and you guys couldn't tell me 3 days prior to it expiring that it's going to expire?
Okay,
You know, that's...
We'll have a discussion, you know, on that, and we'll see if...
Clearly not good enough, you know. Okay, the affordable housing agreement, we spoke a little bit about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There was $68 million over 5 years, I believe, was the agreement?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
68.5 million over 5 years.
68 million over 5 years. Yeah.
No, stop cutting into my time, Jerry.
Hey, we're going to fight with each other. Now, here we go. Here we go. Yeah.
Where are you locating the new affordable housing units?
Well, there's an application process that goes through, and there's a criteria, and they're placed all across the province. And so there's a list of approved projects. We can supply that to you.
Okay. Yeah. So you can provide us with a list of...
Yeah, unless there's some... I don't know.
That'll be coming out in the news.
Yes, right. There will be... What happens in the process is they get conditional approval. Once they come back and make the conditional approval, then we'll be doing an announcement, and all of the approved projects will be in that announcement. So,
okay.
So you'll be able to get that with the next.
All right. There's no approved announcements to date?
No. All that's sent out is a conditional approval. They put in an application. You've got to meet these conditions. Once they come back and meet the conditions, then we do an overall announcement, and that'll become before too long. When? Probably within what, next month or so?
Mm-hmm. Dennis.
Dennis knows the date.
No, I don't know the date because the conditions of the approvals sometimes can take, you know, it's financing, for example, environmental issues, and sometimes it can take months for them to get their conditions, get to that to the approved state. So some of them may be ready soon. They may have their financing in place already.
And
Minister,
this is a shared partnership between us and the federal government. So we've got an indication from the federal government that once we get to where we think we're comfortable with it, we will do that. But it's like Dennis said, you know, we're not going to wait 8 months if there's one or two that's outstanding. So we'll give it a bit more time, and then we'll do the overall announcement.
Tom?
What is the 50-50, the breakdown on the 50-50?
What do you...
Or is it 50-50, the federal-provincial? It is, okay.
Yeah. Tom?
Yes, it's 50-50 for the full $68 million, so half is our, half is the province and half is the federal government. Yeah.
Okay. The partner-managed housing, can you tell us a little more about that?
Tom?
Yes, we have... okay, here we go. Yeah, we have just three components to it. One component is groups or projects that we subsidize directly, and there's about 1,000 of those across the province. We have some with the City of St. John's, Humber Valley Seniors, Marystown Kinsmen are some examples, Sherwood Legion Manor and Carbineer. So we call these partner-managed, and they're run by a volunteer board. So what they do is they will charge the rent based on 25% of their net income, and then whatever their operating cost is above that, we will pay the difference. So we subsidize them basically 100%. We also have 395 co-op houses. These have been on the go for years. Built by
395, is it?
Co-op.
395?
Yes. 395, sorry. They were all built by CMHC, and back when the devolution agreement was signed back in 97, we took over those. But we don't have the same relationship with the co-ops. They're more independent, and we actually just give them a grant of a 2% write-down on their mortgage. And then we have what we call the federal portfolio, and this is a hodgepodge of all kinds of projects like St. Luke's Home, Agnes Pratt. They're mostly nursing homes, nursing home beds. And again, for us, our main involvement there is to collect your mortgage payment and forward that to CMHC, because they all have mortgages with CMHC. So they're further removed again.
Okay. So the 1,000 units that are partner-managed units throughout the province, are they included in the 5,500 units?
No.
Okay.
No, they're separate, yeah.
What is the budget for the partner-managed housing?
The total budget is around $9 million.
And is that funded under the $68 million housing agreement?
No, that's completely separate. Actually, a lot of it is funded under the social housing agreement. That's another agreement we have signed with CMHC that we signed back in 1997.
I'm going to hold you here.
Okay. Now, Jerry owes me about 2 minutes.
Okay. Will you get them back in a little bit? Jerry.
Yes. The pilot project, the portable rent sup. So the rent sup goes to the landlord, not to the tenant who pays the landlord. So the rent sup then is attached, in fact, to the unit rather than the tenant having a rent sup where they can go where they want to go.
Tom?
Yeah, that's how the program works, yeah.
So if Mrs. Smith is under this program and then Mrs. Smith passes away, the rent sup then stays with the unit that she was in?
No, we would take that back then, unless we had somebody else to put in there.
Right.
Right?
So say Mrs. Smith was not part of the portable one, and Mrs. Smith was in a rent sup, but it's not part of the portable one, and she passes away, that rent sup stays with that unit.
It's a one-year agreement with the landlord.
What, the portable one or the regular one?
The non-portable.
The non-portable. Yeah. And the portable one, I imagine it's a one-year agreement too?
Yes, yeah.
So I guess, in fact, it's kind of not really totally a portable rent sup program. It's more of there's some that can be allocated.
Yeah, it's not a rent allowance, I mean,
which
goes to the client, and then the client goes on and we probably wouldn't see him again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take the money and they just go and live wherever.
Yeah.
We haven't gone down that road, and the main reason is we lose control over the accommodations that the client would be living in.
Right.
Because they could take their allowance and possibly, I'm not saying they would, but possibly, you know, get to a low-standard house or a low-standard unit that mm-hmm. didn't meet all our guidelines and criteria.
Are you familiar with the BC one for seniors? They have a seniors rental assistance program. So they actually help the seniors find places, but and it's a portable program.
Dennis?
We had our policy and research department look at other jurisdictions across the country. And, you know, there's a number of different programs
ways
throughout different provinces.
Yeah.
I think the one in B.C. is like $100 a month that goes towards the, you know, as a rental allowance. And they can take it and use it wherever they want to. Ontario is about $100 a month as well.
Right.
That wouldn't go very far.
No.
And as you can see, the average rent sup with us is like $450
right.
or so.
I didn't realize that in their specific rental program for seniors, they have one for seniors, the whole program. Okay.
Yeah, so it's, yeah.
Minister, you wanted to have a word.
But to that point, though, you know, this is something that we've started that's new.
Yes.
Somewhere in this process, I want us to take a look at so that if a lady is here, and we've got family on the other side of town. I want us to just explore, is there a possibility that if she finds a spot there that we can somehow work out an arrangement? So we'll let this piece work its way through, but that would be part of my intentions as well.
In the long run, it saves us money in all different kinds of areas if people are healthy and not isolated. And
but equally as important is to have supports around you if you can live in a particular area where there's family or something else. So it's something that once we work our way through this and ask some questions what a pilot is all about, then we take a look at that as well.
Great. Perfect.
Yes.
Fabulous. Some of these questions that I was burning to ask have been answered, so that's great.
That is great.
Yes. So your strategic plan says that with the new IAH funding, you will focus on private units for specifically challenged and on supportive housing for the homeless and those with complex needs. Can you tell me a little bit about what specifically challenged might be or what you have in mind with these?
Tom.
I'm thinking that would be like complex needs, folks with complex needs.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, those kind of clients.
Yeah. And I guess people with disabilities as well, then, would it be?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
That's the affordable housing.
Yeah, and seniors, yes.
Yes, because I think we need to understand that this is not all about providing seniors units.
Yes.
There is that other component
that's
of it, right?
Yeah. So is there any possibility of using existing units or vacant units that housing has as part of this?
Tom?
As part of the investment in affordable housing? No, we're not allowed.
Oh, okay.
Because that's part of CMHC rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Do you know if there are any wait list for some of the affordable housing units that have been built under the previous agreement?
Tom?
Yes, there are.
Do you have that information?
Not on me, but we do have it. Because we monitor these groups monthly, and they have to provide annual reports,
mm-hmm.
and we do track. We wanted to gauge to see what kind of wait lists that they do have, and in many cases they do have a tidy wait list.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see that.
Wait for the red light. There we go. I know that in my own particular area, Jerry, where these units are being built, that the proponents get calls.
I know.
Even you know, even on speculation that they're putting in an application that they want to get into them, and it just points to demographic and where we got to go.
People, it's full before there's a spade in the ground.
Yep.
I have to mention my dear friend Baxter Hookey. I'm sure many of you have heard from Baxter
heard from
or heard
Port
him on the
Blandford.
Radio. Is there anything going to be done to help Deer Baxter, Hookie, and the other seniors in that area? I think he's Port Rexton, is he?
Yeah. You know, the reality is I don't believe we had an application from that particular area, did we?
No.
Well, he wants to see specifically seniors' housing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, through this process would be one way, but we didn't have a proponent from his...
Oh, an application for this program.
Yeah. Because I believe I've asked that before. I don't think we had an application there, no.
It's hard, hey, because the community groups, these projects become the tail that wags the dog for a few years for these community groups. They're very complex, hey? We've seen how long it takes for them to get up and running, because if you don't have the expertise and you've got volunteer boards, it's tough. It's tough to make these things happen.
Yeah.
I think you're going to give us the budget for all the different programs, the home modification, home repair, residential energy efficiency program. Yes. I've had some seniors who, because I think for the home repair program, you can apply, and then you have to wait. Is it 5 years or 7 years before you can apply again?
Dennis?
And then it's only twice in your lifetime?
Are you talking about HMP?
The home repair program, the PM,
PHMP.
Oh, the home repair program?
Yes.
You can apply every 7 years.
Yeah.
There's a lifetime maximum grant amount of $12,500.
Not a whole lot of money if you gotta get anything done, hey?
No, it's not a lot of money, and you know, now that we've gotten our wait list under control, maybe we can, you know, something that we can
take another look at sometime, you know, in the future.
Yeah, particularly for people who can't do any work themselves, they're finding it hard to be able to get what needs to be done with those amounts.
Now we do offer, you know, a loan as well, low interest loan to go with that if they wish to do that way.
Minister.
I think Dennis's point is a good one, you know, that we invested a large number to get rid of this wait list.
Yeah.
Now that we can serve people within a year, maybe it's time that we take a look at and see if we can revise some. So.
Great. Thank you. Community centers, will they be getting the same budget that they got last year?
Correct. Tom?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Am I supposed to repeat?
You can't answer to the radio.
They're funded at the same level, yeah.
Okay great.
Yeah. I'm going to leave you, Jerry, and go back to Tom, because you're stealing his time, he tells me. Tom Osborne.
Thank you.
Yes. Folks, just for the committee's music, I'm just wondering if we, after this, we take a break, or are we close to cluing up?
Close to cluing up.
Okay.
You're eating in on my time now, Mr. Chair.
No, I'm going to give it back to you, though, dear Mr. Osborne. Here you go.
He's a Montreal fan. That's the problem.
Oh, God. We should stay here all night.
Now, you should know, Minister, that you and I are both Tampa Bay fans.
I am definitely a Tampa Bay fan.
You should know that.
I know that.
I saw you and you saw me.
That's exactly right. I got the jersey to prove it.
You do.
I gave up on Toronto, and I've gone with Tampa.
The $12,500 maximum lifetime grant, is that from all sources, PHRP, REAP, the home modification, or is that just PHRP?
Dennis.
No, that's not. That's just on the provincial home repair program. There's no lifetime maximum on the HMP at all, okay? So if someone, for example, has a disability of what, you know, of some sort, they can apply and they can apply and they can apply again. There's no maximum on the HMP.
Okay. What about
and,
REAP?
And, of course, pardon?
What about REAP?
And REAP is just a one-time, because that's mostly for insulation.
Yeah.
You know, so once you do that once sort of thing, that's it.
But
so REAP is just one time. $3,000. The HMP don't have a maximum, and the HMP has got a $12,500 maximum lifetime. PHRP, sorry.
So under REAP, are you able to apply again in 7 years, or it's just once and once only?
No, it's just a one-time. And the reason for that is that it's a energy efficiency program. So once you make your home energy efficient, there's no need to do it again, if you understand what. And that's basically the reason why. Okay. But now there is energy efficiency items that do come underneath the PHRP program as well. Doors, windows, these sorts of things. What we do with the REAP program is we do an assessment of the home to see where they're losing the most heat, the most energy being lost, and that's done with a blower door test. So once we determine what that is, 90% of the time, by the way, it is insulation. 90% of our time it is that. And it has a savings, an overall savings on average to the people who have it done of about $790 a year. Once it's done, so it's a great program.
Okay, the Provincial Homelessness Fund. What is the committed amount in this year's budget for that?
Homelessness for Minister.
It's $1 million. Yeah.
And what types of initiatives are you going to undertake with that?
Well, I can't speak to what will be rolled out this year, but I know that there were. Different ones. There were some organizations within rural parts of the province, a church group who might have been offering some type of services to groups that operate within the city. It might be something like Choices for Youth, so it's a wide variety. Application based, and when is the deadline for the application? There's no deadline.
Once the funding is gone, then it's.
Yeah.
Does that cover organizations such as the soup kitchens and so on as well?
Yes.
To provide programming, or do they have to provide modifications to their?
Modifications, yeah.
In February of this year, the roadmap to end homelessness in Newfoundland and Labrador you're supposed to map out an action plan. When will we see the results of that action plan, and what can we expect from it?
Yeah, well, that's the org code report you're referring to. Yeah, the report came out, and then what we had is a committee put in place to take a look at the recommendations and then bring them back to government. As I said there a little while ago, that report just came on my desk within the last week or 8 or 9 days. So I haven't had a chance to go through it yet, but I intend to go through that rather soon. And like I said before, this is not something that I want lying around for 6 or 8 months. So you can expect that we'll be acting on that sometime this spring.
Okay. The Supportive Living Program, what's the budget for 2015?
Tom Lawrence,
$5.3 million.
Okay. And do you sign service agreements with the organizations for this program?
Yes, we do. Yes, yeah. And that funding is mainly for operational funding. Groups like Choices for Youth, Stella Circle, you know, the list goes on and on, right?
Do they submit financial statements to Newfoundland and Labrador Housing as a condition for the funding?
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do, yeah.
And are they made public?
No. They're in our files, but we don't make them public, no.
The Patton home in Happy Valley Use Bay. Is that now being utilized?
No, it's not.
Minister, so.
I'm sorry.
Minister?
No, it's not. We've been having some discussions with the local MHA as to see if there are ways we can utilize it. We've been having discussions with housing and also with health.
but we haven't arrived at a place yet where we've come up with something.
Okay. The education incentive program, is that still in place today?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's $625,000 a year, and that's still in place.
$625,000?
$625,000 annually.
Okay. Was that $675,000 at one point?
No, $625,000 was the maximum.
Okay.
It was cut back at one time, and then we reinstated it again.
Okay. What are the results of that program so far?
We're finding that, well, it's geared towards our clients' children, right? And of course, any of our clients who are in, you know, post-secondary education. We're having, you know, good results with it. The whole idea was to try to keep our tenants, our clients' children in school longer. And we're finding that that's working. The problem is there's still not a huge increase in the number that are graduating from high school. They're staying in school longer. But so, you know, that's something that we're looking at, and it's a tough challenge, I tell you.
Okay. So have you been doing evaluations of the program?
Yes.
To determine how you can improve it, or other incentives you can provide the students to increase the number of grads?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. We just we did one there several months ago. And it's being finalized now, we'll say, right? So we should know some more better results or more conclusive results in another couple of months.
Okay. Are the students' attendance rates tracked by Newfoundland and Labrador Housing?
Yes, they are, yeah.
How often?
I think it's on twice a year, because that's when the allowance or the... The allowance is paid out twice a year, so that's we go and get all that information from the Department of Education.
Okay. A couple of years ago, in estimates, Housing indicated that about 80% of their units were 3 and 4 bedroom. What percentage is that today?
It's about the same. It's one of the biggest bigger challenges that we're facing. We get the units that were built in the 50s, 60s, 70s, all 3 and 4 bedrooms, and because families were bigger back then, and now our demographics are shifted completely, that most of our clients need 1 and 2 bedroom units, and so that is a challenge. There's no doubt about it. But like Dennis said, if you require a 2-bedroom, you know, our policy allows you to move into a 3-bedroom. So that, you know, that helps there.
Okay. What's the percentage today the need for 3-4-bedroom units versus the 1-2-bedroom units?
I would say it's around 20%, 15-20% maybe, that need a 3-4-bedroom. 85% require 1 and 2.
Does Housing have any plans? I know there was some discussion earlier, but I mean, if a 4-bedroom unit is not required and you're, you know, putting a 2-bedroom or a 3-bedroom need in a 4-bedroom unit, is there, and I'm not suggesting that this is the answer, but just wondering, you know, is there any benefit to looking at building additional 1 and 2-bedroom units and probably disposing of the 4-bedroom units?
Okay.
Yeah. Minister.
I think, Tom, one of the things, like we're going to have to take a look at it. There's no doubt about it. The two priorities, one was some of them needed work done on renovations and whatnot and maintenance to bring them up to code. I think there's something like 77 or 80% now that have been brought up to standard and improved upgrades to the units. The second thing was investments to get the wait list down, as much as we can. I think that's where we need to start looking now. I know, like Dennis mentioned, it's an expensive venture to do, but I think, you know, in the coming year or two, we're going to have to take a look at it.
Yeah, just on this point, Mr. Yeah. Chair, and I'll let it move on, but I know it's expensive. It's probably almost as expensive to renovate a four-bedroom unit to turn it into one-bedroom and one-two-bedroom, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be, but is there any value in exploring the option of disposing of the four-bedroom units, selling them to, you know, mm-hmm. private unit, maybe even looking at making them affordable sales and reinvesting the money into building one- and two-bedroom units?
And I won't criticize all your ideas either, so it's something we can take under advisement. Like you said, not, you know,
but I bet you
we're not doing all bad
do.
Things, so I might something to look at.
All right. Tom, are you done?
No, I still have a couple of other
okay.
questions. But
then, based on that, Jerry, and you've got another 10 minutes for sure?
Less?
Yeah. Well, I've got one or two questions. If I can ask those, then Jerry can wrap it up with...
Okay, because I'm thinking we've only got one staff person downstairs, yeah. and they need yeah. a break. So if we can get it done in the next...
Final question. Okay. Why is it that Newfoundland and Labrador Housing does not provide fire extinguishers for the units?
Dennis.
We've talked to the fire departments. It's not required in single-unit homes. It's required, you know, I mean, in multi-unit buildings, you know, the fire departments, they're required in the hallways and so on, you know, the fire extinguishers. But it's not required in an individual home, you know, by the fire department. The other issue was is that, you know, you have to, when you have 5,500 homes, the task of having them recharged every year and make sure that they're all checked and up to you don't want to create a false expectation, for example, that the thing is charged and ready to go. So there's a lot of work involved, and the fact that it wasn't required, no more than is required in your own home, we haven't gone there. It's not something that we thought about it over the years, but it's not required by the fire department itself.
I don't often lie, Mr. Chair, but one final question on that related to this. Has anybody done an evaluation of the cost of providing those units versus the cost of, because, I mean, every couple of years for sure, maybe more often than that, you hear of a Newfoundland and Labrador housing unit that has been extensively damaged by fire. There's obviously a cost to refurbishing that unit, making it livable again. Would one outweigh the other? I mean, if somebody had a fire extinguisher in their home, would that extensive damage perhaps be...
I can't give you the current numbers, but when we did look at it in years gone by, it was way more expensive than it was for the cost of our fires. Now, I know that's not a way to look at it, but it was a lot more expensive. The other thing was more expensive as well was the insurance on our properties. We're self-insured. We spent, this year we've been fortunate. Our fires are not, in the last 12 months, we've had a few, but we've had more in other years. We talk more about education with our clients, you know, the way that, you know, cooking fires, fat fires, these sorts of things. And I think that's where we need to focus in the future, is on that, in that area of prevention rather than to, you know.
Okay. Jerry.
Snow clearing. I've heard from folks in Froude Avenue. Froude Avenue had a program where they paid students who were tenants in the houses to do snow clearing for people who were living... who were with physical disabilities who were living in those units, and then they said they had to stop because of insurance. The community center said that they couldn't do that anymore, that they couldn't pay the young folks who were living in the housing units to do snow clearing in front of the houses of people who are physically disabled. And so we've got people who are physically disabled in the units. They can't get out. I mean, I've gone over and shoveled myself.
Do you know if it was a... workman's comp issue, or
it was an insurance issue. So I don't know if it was workman's comp or anything, but it's a huge problem for pe- people who are calling me can't get out. Don't know what I'm going to do. There's no one to shovel. I can't find anybody who'll shovel. So we try and find people on Facebook. Can you go shovel? And again, is there something to be done? Because often it's not that much. You know, it's just their little walkways or their ramps.
I'll tell you what I can do. I can check with the executive directors of all the community centers to find out. The issue with snow clearing for tenants, we have, and you mentioned people with wheelchair ramps and these sorts of things. There's a lot of our tenants that have other disabilities as well that may not be, you know, wheelchair related, but they have other disabilities with regards to back injuries, heart disease, on it goes, and we don't know where we would stop if we were to go down a snow clearing. And the other problem is, too, is it's not so easy to find seasonal workers to do that anymore. You know, it's very difficult.
Well, they had a program where they were paying students who were living in the community, which seemed like a great thing to do.
We provided the funding for them to do that. That's the reason why I'm kind of interested in what the reasons were why they couldn't continue on, because we did provide them with a small amount of funds so they could hire some kids in the community to go and shovel.
Dennis, it would be great if you could check that out.
Yeah, I'll check
it out. It's a big deal. I have just two quick questions. The Federal Homelessness Partnering Strategy, I can't remember if we already got the number of community-managed supportive housing units that exist in the province now. So that would be, I guess, like the Stella circles, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Tom?
Yeah, we don't have that number, but we could probably get it.
And wondering again what the wait list is. And again, we're going to go all over the province. And what we're hearing from everyone is the need for these supportive housing units. Affordable housing plus as well supportive housing units. Desperate. And then my last question, back to a Baxter Hookey. So there's been no application from that community. Is there some kind of initiative or program where you go and look at where the needs are across the province and encourage the development of those kinds of housing, you know, people to for the uptake for that money? So, like, for instance, would anybody have gone to Port Rex and saying, we know there's a problem here. Hey, folks, is there anybody who would like to step up?
Well, Minister, closing comment.
I know in the case of Baxter Hookey, we've had conversations with him. I've spoken with him myself. My staff has spoken with him on several occasions. Beside the private sector component putting forward an application, you also can have nonprofit organizations that can put forward. But we have not received any from
us. I know that. So what my question is, has there been any outreach? Do you have any kind of outreach where you look at where there's some real need and then somebody from housing goes out and meets with community groups and say, this program's available. Is anybody in the community interested? Because there's a particular need.
My response to that one would be that, you know, we have to take a look at, is there somebody within close proximity of that community
whereby
there be housing? Because it's going to be impossible to have units in every community in Newfoundland and Labrador.
I know that. Yeah.
So then I guess, you know, in certain areas, in this case here, somebody may say there's one close by in Farnville or something of that nature.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just was wondering if that Newfoundland and Labrador Housing does that proactive job of trying to encourage different communities where there's a great need.
No, we have that. That's. Are you want to speak to Dennis?
Dave.
Now, boy, you're going to get.
I finally get a question at the tail end. All I can say to you is that there is a consultation process that we hold every couple of years. I know Morley Lindstedt and Kate Moffat in our department, I think it was 2 years ago, went out and went across the province talking to all the groups.
I remember
and that's
that,
where
yeah.
you gather that information. And I think in the case of the gentleman you're talking about, they need to establish, I would think, as a first step, a community advisory board within the community.
I'm not talking about I'm not talking about him doing it.
No,
I'm
no.
Just saying, yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, because sometimes when you gather together as a group, you bring the community together, and that's who we want to consult with to see what the issues are. And, of course, it's not just about working on problems. It's also trying to get people to suggest solutions.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you to the committee members. Thank you to the staff at Newfoundland Labrador Housing and the minister. Clerk, can I ask you to call the subject, please?
1.1.01.
Shall 1.1.01 carry? All those in favor? All those opposed? Carried. Shall the total carry? All those in favor? All those opposed? Carried. Shall I report the estimates of the Newfoundland Labrador Housing Corporation? Carried without amendment. All those in favor? Carried. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes of the Social Services Committee for May 12, 2015, the Department of Justice and Public Safety and Fire and Emergency Services. Motion, please. Moved by Mr. Little, seconded by Mr. Pollitt. All those in favor? Are you all opposed? Carried. Minister, staff, thank you so much. The committee thanks you for coming this evening and providing the answers and receiving all the questions. A motion to adjourn. Moved by Mr. Osborne, seconded by Ms. Rogers, all those in favor? All those opposed? Carried.